This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is indeed, and welcome to it again for this Tuesday, April the 9th. Glad to have you aboard today. Elliot's in Vancouver, was at the game last night, Vancouver over the Vegas Golden Knights. He will drop by here in a couple of moments. Amongst other things to discuss with Elliot, Arizona and the mayor's letter from Scottsdale. We'll get into that, and we'll get into the future of the Arizona Coyotes, something we've been doing going back to 2010. So 14 years, and we'll carry on, and we'll continue. So Elliot stops by here in a couple of moments from Vancouver. A big win last night for the Vancouver Canucks over the Vegas Golden Knights. Want to get to a Rick Tocchet clip here in a second, but first, bottom of the hour is special guest Kevin Cheveldayoff, the general manager of the Winnipeg Jets. One of the most impressive teams we've seen so far this season, safe to say, right? We're all on the same page about that one. Winnipeg Jets have had a impressive run so far this season. We're all on the same page about that. We expect some hardware to be handed out, certainly to Connor Hellebuck, maybe other people. Do we put Rick Bowness in the Jack Adams conversation? Do we put Kevin Cheveldayoff in the Jim Gregory conversation? We'll get into that. Jets, by the way, face off against the Preds tonight. The Preds are a team who tonight could clinch a playoff spot. Also, the Los Angeles Kings could clinch one. The other clinching scenarios, or what's up for grabs here, I'll get into the scenarios here in a couple of seconds because I don't want to bore you too early. I'll bore you later on in the program when we go through all the intricacies of the clinching scenarios. The Rangers and the Stars and the Bruins, they can all win division titles tonight. The Nashville Predators and the Los Angeles Kings can clinch playoff spots. This evening, it'll be the Jets and the Preds. We'll talk to Cheveldayoff about that coming up at the bottom of the hour. Also, in hour two, very much looking forward to this. Our old pal Scott Burnside, who recently, a couple of days ago, wrote a really interesting piece at sportsnet.ca. Scotty Burnside, of course, from Burnside on Hockey, penning a piece for our website on Atlanta and could it still thrive as an NHL market? It's failed twice, see Flames, see Thrashers, but could the third time be a charm? And if so, how? We're going to talk a lot about expansion and relocation today, coming up on the program, certainly in a couple of minutes here with Elliot. But we'll talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Toronto Maple Leafs last night. Austin Matthews with goal number 65. Craig Simpson with perhaps the line of the night. Are we going to stop the game every time Sidney Crosby gets hit? That was a great line from Simmer last night. We'll get into that game, but want to get into Vancouver and Vegas. 4-3 win. Looked like this was going to get out of hand early. Vegas scores a couple of Jack Eichel with a pair. And you think to yourself, uh-oh, it's not going to be there for Shelovs this night. But then the Vancouver Canucks turn around. Congratulations, Brock Besser, on goal number 40. Congratulations on JT Miller on hitting the century mark, 100 points for the Vancouver forward. And afterwards, Rick Tocchet talked plenty about Connor Garland. Let's hear from the Vancouver coach. Check this out.
400 games. I mean, it's not 1,000 games or anything, and I'm sure he was a little embarrassed by the T-shirts, yeah. But you've coached him for a lot of those, including sort of the first ones, given his size, given sort of a fifth-round pick, his second time through the draft. When a guy like that manages to make it to 400, do you look at it differently, especially when you've had a front-row seat to so much of their career?
Yeah, I think I coached him about three. It must be 300 and something, right? I mean, I know Gars really well. You know, the players kid me that, you know, he's my favorite, you know, teacher's pet type of thing. So there's a little bit of fun there. Millsy always, busts my balls about that. But yeah, I've known Gars for a lot of his career in the NHL. That's who he is, right? He's a small guy that plays big. I mean, that second goal, like, where is he? Right in front of the net. And, you know, he had to change his game from the minors. He was a point getter, like a high, but he had to change his game into being a more complete player. And I think I told you the story with Gars where it was with Arizona, and I told him when we were in practice, I said, you're not a 17-minute player. You're just not. And he looked at me, he goes, well, you better make me one. And I thought that was a big part of, you know, when a player says that to you, and it kind of, it helped my career, like, to be honest with you, like, you know, yeah, you're right. I have to help you out. So we have a good bond, me and Gars, and he plays really hard for me. He really does.
So that's 400 games for Connor Garland. Congratulations there. 400 used to be a magical number in the NHL. I believe it was 400. That was when you hit your full pension, is when you hit the 400 game mark. That is not true anymore. There's different calculations. I am not an actuary, but there are other ways to determine when you get full pension in the NHL. So congratulations. And I remember watching Garland in Moncton when he played in the QMJHL, and Tockett is right. He was that guy, you know, American forward. He was that player in junior hockey that I think those last 2 years in Moncton, he put up 130 points every season. And we said, okay, what is this guy going to be like at the NHL level? What is he going to be? What is he going to turn into? And there was a while there where we thought, Connor Garland's kind of stalled here. Is this kind of where he, you know, rubs his head up against the ceiling for what his capacity is? But listen, he continues to get better and has found himself on a really nice line, a really nice spot with the Vancouver Canucks. And their top six looks solid, looked good last night against the Vegas Golden Knights with a big 4-3 victory. With that, we'll bring in Elliot Friedman from Vancouver, the 32 Thoughts podcast, and Hockey Night in Canada. Hello, Friege.
Jeff, I'm just walking by the marina here. Your yacht is looks like it's being well taken care of, well maintained. Everything good. Your staff is washing it as we speak. So you've got everybody. You've got the Marikites trained well.
Well, they know how I like the chrome shine, so make sure they do a good job there, Elliot. Make sure they do a good job in Vancouver. First of all, before we get to the game last night, and I do want to talk about why you're there as well, which is very important, but give us a sense of where Vancouver, their fans, because as we've talked about before, not all fans are on social media. There are other fans that don't exist there and don't want to get in that playpen slash mud pen. Where are Vancouver Canucks fans, capital F, at with this team right now?
Well, last night was a really good night here. You know, they fell behind 2-0 early. You know, Sulov's righted themselves. The power play gave them confidence. Hughes, who's number one on my Norris list, had to help get them going on the power play last night. And that turned into a heck of a game. That was a really, really good game between two really good teams. And, you know, I thought last night here, the whole Garland thing really epitomized about how a lot of people feel. You know, Garland, as he talked about, he's the ultimate underdog. They made the shirts last night. JT Miller did. For Garland's 400th game, you know, he played hard. He had a big part in the comeback in the first period when they were down 2-0, and you know, he was right. He was all over the puck. He was right in the middle of the action. They were chanting his name. Tockett was singing his praises post game. Like, that was a feel good win last night. You're down 2-0 against the defending Stanley Cup champion. I know they're a little banged up right now, but that's still a hell of a team. And I think that, you know, Tockett admitted that Besser was a little sore. I think there's a few players there battling some things. It was a good win, and it was an energized building. And there were a lot of Canuck fans who left that game last night feeling pretty happy. If you play like that in the playoffs, more good things are going to happen to you than not.
Whatever happened to the trade request? You know, I'm watching this last night, and they're chanting his name, and he scores a pair of goals and all of it. And I can't think of the beginning of the year, we're talking about where Connor Garland is going to end up, Elliot. It's been a bizarre year for Connor Garland, but everything seems to be lining up perfectly when that Rubik's Cube all clicks together finally at the end.
It's like The Simpsons. Everything's coming up Milhouse. Now everything's coming up Garland. There's no question. It wasn't so much a trade request as, you know, he knew they were thinking of moving him. And his rep, who was Judd Moldaver, was given permission to talk to teams. And at the time, the challenge was the contract and what were the Canucks willing to do. And obviously they couldn't reach a deal. And sometimes the best trades are the ones you don't make. And I think it's also a reminder, Jeff, a very important reminder that a lot of things aren't linear. Like, life is not linear. Life isn't point A to point B and we all get there. No questions asked and no changes. You know, things for all of us, you have to adapt and things occur that you're not expecting. And You know, I would bet at the beginning of the year that Garland would have never believed that it would have unfolded this way, but things couldn't be worked out. And instead of pouting and whining and not doing anything positive about it, he's turned himself into a pretty important part of this team. Like I said, and anybody who watched this game last night saw it, when they were down 2-0, Garland was one of the guys, and I thought Hughes was another one who really dragged them into the fight. And good on him for that.
You know, there's a couple of players on this team, Garland's one of them, that have really, you know, started to take their game to the next level, really shown, you know, improvement and growth. And I think of Nils Höglander, and I think of Dakota Joshua as well. And then last night we saw a couple of really nice numbers. JT Miller, 100 points, and Brock Besser. Now, I know it's not quiet in Vancouver, but everywhere else, everybody, Brock Besser has 40 goals. Is this one of the more underreported stories outside of Vancouver?
Well, I think that if you remember, too, like you talked about Garland, remember where we were a year ago with Besser. He was ready to go, too.
Yeah.
You know, he basically said, if you guys want to move me, I'm not going to complain about it. And a year later, he's a 40-goal guy. And Miller, you know, Miller had a shift last night. Like, he hasn't changed, and I say that in a good way. 100 points is pretty impressive, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a shift last night where he failed to get the puck out of the zone, and it didn't hurt them. They got a whistle, but he was skating towards the glass as the play ended, and he sticked against the glass, and I was laughing. I was like, you know, I understand why he's upset, but it just shows that he's not satisfied with anything. I mean, those guys are two huge parts. I'll say something else, too. So last night, I was sitting near where the scouts sit, and that my seat were for the game was
right
there. No, I was not wearing black. I was wearing blue. But that's pretty funny, though.
Thank you.
You know who they were really talking up at the end of the game was Pettersson. And I know he doesn't have a ton of points right now. He hasn't scored a lot lately. But he was on the ice a lot at the end of the game when they were trying to protect that one goal lead. And, you know, there were a lot of things that didn't go easy for Vancouver at the end of that game. They lost a few faceoffs. Hurdle was very good last night on draws. But he made some tough plays to get the puck out of bad areas. And it was the kind of thing that, you know, I really appreciated sitting next to them because I heard them talking about it and I realized what they were talking about. I'm a big eavesdropper, Jeff. Always got to protect your conversations when I'm around. And but it was interesting hearing them talk. There was one play where the puck was in a bad spot and he couldn't clear it because he was not in a great position to do it, but he kind of put it into an open area. Like, basically, he took it out of a dangerous area and he put it into an area that wasn't perfect, but it was less dangerous. And it kind of eased the pressure on them a bit. And there was one other play like that where he leaned on someone. Again, it didn't eliminate the danger, but it eased the danger in the moment. And they were just talking about how, like, he was leaning on some Vegas guys and using his body. And when I asked them about it afterwards, they said that it was just two of those plays where you look at it and you realize, while he didn't eliminate the threat, he dialed down the temperature for a few seconds so Vancouver could regroup in their defensive zone. And I just kind of like that. I thought it was very interesting.
Let me tell people why you're out there as well. It's the annual Canucks for Kids telethon. And I'll be honest with you, Elliot, and I've known you for a long time. We've worked together for a long time. Even when, how shall I say this? Even when waters were choppy between you and the Vancouver Canucks, they've always brought you back to do this. Like, it's one of the things that I really respect about the Vancouver Canucks organization. Even though, you know, maybe the temperature is a little bit hot, whatever, they've always had you back to do this. I know this is near and dear to your heart and very personal for you. Do you have a couple of words about the Canucks for Kids telethon?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true, Jeff. And actually, it's funny, I asked someone about it there because what, a year ago, I caught wind that the Canucks were a little unhappy with some things I've been working on. And I remember when I got invited back last year, I was kind of surprised. And, you know, what they said to me is one's not the same as the other.
Good for them.
And, well, it's really good because I think there's a lot of people that don't think like that in this day and age. The world now is all ideological. It's not about right or wrong. It's about a side. And I think that goes into a lot of places. And I've always appreciated the fact that the Canucks don't see it that way. And I really like doing it. It's fun. Randy Janda is doing it with me again this year. We did it together last year. As a matter of fact, I have to ask Randy about this, but he was at an event yesterday, I think with the Prime Minister, like an invitation I'm definitely not getting anytime soon.
Wow.
So, you know, I've got a big partner here. I'm definitely not the star of this operation, but no, I really do enjoy it. And Canucks the nation is very, very generous. And the key thing here is that the first time I hosted it was the year after Scott Oak last hosted it. And the donation total has never been lower than Scott's. And that is all I care about. I cannot allow Scott Oak to have a victory.
Oh, look, where's my mirror? Oh, look, there I am again. Oh, look, there's my belly button. Everything is about me. Enough about me talking about me. Why don't you talk about me? Listen, I don't know how much
I thought Hurdle was pretty good last night. You could tell he was a little bit off, and he played a lot of wing, but he took draws at the end of the game, and I had a chance to speak to him briefly after, and, you know, he's excited. So that's a... That's a big ad for them. Now, I think also, and the Golden Knights don't talk about this stuff, so I understand, but I think also Stone had a checkup recently, so we'll see what all this means.
We'll see where this one heads. I don't know how much of the Toronto-Pittsburgh game you saw early last night on during the Amber Bowl, Rogers Monday Night Hockey. It was an interesting one. I mean, it was a tough game for Sidney Crosby, whether it's the collision with Matthews, whether it's the puck in the face with Bobby McMahon, whether it's crashing into the post, courtesy of Jake McCabe. We saw Austin Matthews score goal number 65. We saw Jake McCabe end it in overtime. A lot of controversy about why Sidney Crosby wasn't out there. How come Lars Eller is starting out there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How did you see, if you did see at all, the game last night early, the Maple Leafs over the Penguins?
Well, what I could see of it, I couldn't watch all of it, but what I did see of it, it was really entertaining. It was a good game. Yeah. There was a lot of drama. I wanted to shout out what Marner did right before the winning goal. Like, just, you know, the pure high IQ of the play to check on the bench, be aware of the situation. There were a lot of people, I think, who would be in that situation, and their blood pressure and their heart would be pumping because they'd be like, we could win the game here right now. I've got to make this play in a hurry. And Marner is one of those who can slow the game down, make sure that everything's right, and still make the play to win the game. I thought that was just a hell of a play. I initially thought it was a high stick. I'm not crazy about the play. I guess to the letter of the law, it was right because it was he did connect with the puck, but I'm not crazy about the play. Obviously, at the beginning of overtime, we had the explanation post-game about why Crosby wasn't out there with the skate. I was a little surprised if it wasn't Crosby, it wouldn't be Malkin. But I thought that was it was a great game, and it's kind of ironic that one of Kyle Dubas's best deals that brought in Jake McCabe cost him a point that they so desperately needed.
Yeah. I'm sure he was wanting Michael Bunting to be the overtime hero in that one. How much time? We got a little bit of time here. So I want to get into the Arizona situation with you. And there's a couple of parts of this. Like, before we saw the open letter from the mayor of Scottsdale, And for what it's worth, I was told not to put too much stock in there. And the one thing that someone pointed out to me was no other council members signed that letter. It was exclusively the mayor of Scottsdale. And this is Phoenix jurisdiction, not Scottsdale. But before we even got there,
yeah,
we saw a tweet from Ryan Smith, owner of the Utah Jazz, who wonders yeah. about if a hockey team came to Utah, what should the name be? You know, just asking for no particular reason, just curious, just tweeting on a Monday here, no agenda here whatsoever, no wink, wink. And then we saw the letter from the mayor from Scottsdale. And, you know, I looked into it to try to get people's opinions and try to get a sort of sense of, you know, where this is all right now in advance of the auction. What could timelines be? What could contingencies be here? How much stock should we put in this open letter from the mayor of Scottsdale? You know, one person pointed out to me that part of the proposal is for an events theater, 3,500-seat events theater in Phoenix. And, you know, the mayor of Scottsdale is an architect by trade, and he helped put together the Scottsdale Arts Center and the Civic Center as well. Now, the Arts Center would certainly be threatened by having new event theater in Phoenix. And I kind of looked at that and said, well, that starts to make a little bit more sense here. But when you saw all these things coming together yesterday, and I'm sure you made calls like the rest of us did, what did you find out? And do you have any, do you have more questions or answers at this point?
You know, I've told you this before, and I've said this before, my number one rule with this whole situation is that nothing ever goes as planned. So you have to be, you have to be ready for everything and anything. Nothing ever happens. Like we talked about Garland before, like life is not a straight line. This is, this is the, I don't know what the opposite of a straight line would be in a thesaurus, but this is that. This is the opposite of a straight. I mean, crooked doesn't even do it justice. I don't think crooked is acceptable enough. So I think we all have to understand that, you know, like I don't know about Arizona politics. I'm not crazy about politicians anyway. So I don't know how much to put stock in that. This is, first of all, also too, you mentioned Ryan Smith, and that was very interesting timing yesterday. And the NBA Board of Governors are in New York right now. And so he's there. And don't forget, it was a couple years ago when Ryan Smith first had dinner with Gary Bettman after an NBA Board of Governors meeting. So it's not impossible to believe that there will be some contact between them while he's in New York City. This is what I believe, Jeff, and I have said this before. I believe that Gary Bettman is working on two separate things right now. Number one is the short-term future of the Arizona Coyotes, and number two is the long-term future of hockey in Arizona. Because as I have said, and I believe, that if they leave, they're going back. They will not give up on the market. So, look, are the Coyotes focused on June 27th? Absolutely. But I think what the NHL is focused on is all the different options. I watched Todd Walsh and Javier Gutierrez on a Coyotes broadcast a couple of weeks ago, and it was a good interview. It was an informative session, but one of the things they talked about was if they win the auction, you know, they might not be in a new building till the fall of 2027. And one of the questions I was asking after that is, how does everybody feel about that? Is everybody comfortable with three more years of this? So that's what I think. I think in this situation, you have to be ready for anything. I think in a perfect world, the NHL would be convinced that Arizona's going to win this, and you go to the auction, and then you figure things out. But I think you just have to be prepared for the possibility that something different could occur. Now, I don't know what the percentage of that is. I don't want to handicap it. But I think if you expect this, that it's going to be smooth sailing until June 27th and nothing's going to happen between now and then, I don't know how, with the history of this entire situation, you would be comfortable accepting that as being likely or possible.
One of the things that I wonder about, I want to end on this one and get back to hockey on the ice, but one of the things that I wonder about through all of this is we've always positioned this or couched this as this is Gary Bettman dealing with this. This is or Gary Bettman and Bill Daly dealing with this issue. How much in the back of their mind do they have what the Board of Governors wants and what's going to make them happy through all of this? Or is this just completely Gary driving the bus on this one?
You know, I've always believed, Jeff, that, look, like, Bettman is the boss. He generally gets what he wants, and he runs the league very powerfully. But I think there's always a matter of how much noise are you willing to deal with, and B, how many fights do you want to have? And look, I think there are pressures in this particular case. I think there is pressure from the Players Association. I think they're, although they really can't do anything from a CBA point of view, they're making a lot of noise about it. And I think there are pressures from the Board of Governors. And again, you know, knowing that Bettman rules very powerfully, I still think, you know, that he's well aware that this, you know, this can't continue the current way. So, but like I said, I think he looks at this as a two-pronged thing, the short term and the long term. And so I think he's trying to settle both things at once. And part of that is, if the team has to go at some point, I think he wants to set it up so it can be brought back in another way. And I think all of that is part of what he's dealing with now. I mean, also, don't forget that, you know, there have been reports that they've been meeting with the Atlanta to Atlanta bids. I think there is more than one. I've heard there's more than one group in Houston. So I think he's like, I wrote about this, I think 2 weeks ago. You know, like there's a big conversation, I think. Actually, I shouldn't say big conversation, but there is definitely a conversation about what this league could look like in a few years. You know, where are we going here? And, you know, they've got some interest expansion-wise, Utah, Atlanta, two of them, potentially Houston. You know, what else is out there? I think they're all trying to figure this out. And, you know, like the CBA is up in 2 years. You know, you and I have already talked a lot about how it sounds like the CHL-NHL agreement is going to be something that is dealt with as part of, and the CHL-NCAA set up. I think the NHL wants that to be part of its new CBA, the development model. Like, there's, like, you know, we all, it's the playoffs. Like, the best time for the NHL to deal with this is almost now because we're all focused on the playoffs, right? It's the playoff races. There's big games tonight. There's big games this week. The playoffs start in, 12 days? Well, it's a good time for them to try to get a lot of business done quietly.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned that thing about the NCAA, the CHL, and the NHL. Like you've talked about here on the podcast, we've both written about as well. It's going to be lawyers that drive this ship and force the change. But I really do believe, Elliot, that the main force in what that change is going to look like is going to be designed by the NHL. Like, I think we know what the new development model could look like, but I think the whole thing is going to be led by, and who knows, maybe, you know, it might be, you know, Bill Daly's portfolio on this one, but it'll be led by the National Hockey League. Agree or disagree?
I do agree with that. Like, there's going to be a lot of egos at the table. And Jeff, as you know from working in broadcasting, whenever there's a lot of egos at the table, it's hard to get from point A to point B all the time.
Yes.
But eventually you do get there. And, you know, like that's the same thing here. I think there's a lot of egos at the table between the NCAA and the CHL and everybody involved, but it's going to get there eventually. Yeah.
true. Okay, thanks for checking in on my yacht in Vancouver. I hope you have a wonderful walk this afternoon, strolling through Stanley Park and wherever you end up. Enjoy Vancouver and enjoy the...
I have actual work to do.
You do? What are you doing?
Yeah. Well, we're going to do. We're going to tape some pre-playoff interviews. And Colby's on his way here because he's doing one of them too. He worked last night in Toronto, so he's on his way out. And so we're taping some stuff for the playoffs.
All right. Well, have fun with that and say hey to Colb. So he was working with Getzoff on the Penguins broadcast last night. That was fantastic. All right. Good stuff. Thanks as always, Friege. We'll check in soon.
Good to see you or watching our broadcast, Jeff. Take care, bud.